Hello, everybody, and welcome aboard USS Lucid. Now, this is a ship that many of you may not have actually heard of before, but she's actually a very important and very interesting ship from right at the end of the time period that the channel covers. So, what exactly is USS Lucid? Well, she's actually a minesweeper. So, that may have been a clue to some of you who are looking in the background, because you see this notice here, which everyone would have seen coming on board. There's warning, failure to report all magnetic materials brought on board to the magnetic signature control officer or petty officer of the watch will endanger the safety of this ship and the lives of her crew. Now, we'll explain a little bit more about why they had these controls in place in a second, but for now, let's continue around this portion of the ship. So we're on the upper deck of the ship and we're going to start heading forward. But of course, there's a bell, so of course, we must ring said bell. So, this is where we just started. You can see there's the fantail, which we'll be exploring a little bit later. But she's not a large ship, so we're going to continue forward, past the forward superstructure. Here's a little bit of a work in progress, and we're going to come out here. So here is the forward deck with the heaviest armament on the ship, this 40mm anti-aircraft gun. So let's take a bit of a closer look at this. Right, so here we are at the 40mm anti-aircraft dash anti-surface gun, and you might be thinking to yourself, well, hang on a minute, Drac, you've shown us loads of 40mm guns on various ships by now. What's so important about this one? Well, two things. The short interesting fact about it is that this is a single 40mm anti-aircraft gun. Now, we've seen lots of single 20mm guns. We've seen quite a few twin and quadruple 40mm guns, but the single 40mm gun is actually a relatively rare thing to survive on museum ships, partly because while there were an awful lot of land-based 40mm single Bofors, the single 40mm at sea was actually a relatively rare. So even though the twins and the quads were considerably more expensive, obviously heavier, required more crew, because they were more efficient in terms of usage of deck space per amount of firepower provided, they tended to be installed on things like destroyers and battleships and cruisers and aircraft carriers, whereas a single would be put in place only if you were very, very short on space or if you were incredibly short on weight. But actually, the reason why you've only got a single here is not to do with either of those things when it comes to Lucid, and everything to do with what Lucid is as a minesweeper. So the reason that Lucid and the rest of the 100 and a little bit minesweepers of the class were built was all because the US actually had a load of minesweepers coming out of World War II for very obvious reasons. However, during the Korean War, when they sent minesweepers in to deal with various mines that the North Koreans and their allies had laid, the US lost several minesweepers in some fairly well-known incidents. And initially, they were a little bit confused because, okay, yes, you do lose minesweepers when they're sweeping mines. That is the nature of the work. It is quite dangerous. But this was quite a number of losses in a very short period of time to relatively few mines. And they realized very quickly that the problem was that all the World War II minesweepers were steel-hulled, which obviously made them durable, made them relatively lightweight, etc. But back in World War II, the vast, vast majority of mines were contact mines. So you literally swept for them with paravanes. But by the time you get to the 1950s, you have magnetic mines, which were around in the Second World War, but they're now far more common. They're also far more sensitive, so they can pick up much smaller vessels, like, say, a minesweeper. And there's acoustic mines, pressure influence mines, and all sorts of other things like this. And therefore, a steel-hulled minesweeper is just far too vulnerable. And so there's an emergency crash production of these ships in the very early 1950s, hence why it's right at the end of the time period of the channel. And the ship we're standing on is, in fact, pretty much entirely built out of wood, because, of course, wood is non-magnetic. Now, there are some parts of the ship, like hatches and so forth, the propeller shafts, the rudder shafts, etc. These have to be made out of metal. But you can't make it out of standard steel because that will generate a magnetic field and then obviously everybody dies. And so these ships, although they're quite small, and as I said, this is the heaviest armament on them, they actually ended up costing about as much as a full-size destroyer Not because of the wooden hull, but because of all the other fittings on them. So hatches, capstans, the rudder shafts, etc. All of these were actually made of non-magnetic metals. So there's some non-magnetic stainless steel, but also an awful lot of bronze. The camera is currently sitting on a capstan, which is actually entirely made out of bronze. And you can imagine that's quite expensive. And other sections, like the rudder shafts, are made out of a combination metal, which is a mixture of nickel and bronze. But all of this is very expensive to make material-wise, very expensive to manufacture, but it all goes into minimizing the magnetic signature of the ship. Unfortunately, one of the things you can't make out of bronze or stainless steel is the gun barrel of a 40mm Bofors. And just this single 40mm exerted enough of a magnetic field that some of the very sensitive early Cold War magnetic mines could be set off by its presence. And so this entire gun beneath it would have a triple coil of degaussing cables, which could be adjusted, because obviously a degaussing cable, you run current through it. You could adjust the current to perfectly cancel out the magnetic signature of this particular 40mm. So you could have a small amount, relatively speaking, of magnetic steel on board without setting off said magnetic mines. And of course, as you move through the Earth's magnetic field to places where it's weaker or stronger, you would have to dial that in. So you would set it as you left harbor, but once you got to an area, like say off the coast of Korea, and you were ready to start sweeping, you'd have to recheck that you had it perfectly zeroed out. And there's other features like that aboard the ship, which we'll see later on. But for now, we're actually going to go inside the superstructure. One, because there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. And two, because it's very hot out here. So just coming down the starboard side, you can see there's a degaussing panel. So that would be running over to the degaussing cables I mentioned earlier. This is the small arms locker with a 50 cal machine gun resting up casually against it, because two 50 cals comprise the rest of the ship's gun armament. And then over here, turning down a little bit, this is what counts as the ship's magazine. As you can see, you know, there's a handful of shells, bunch of cases of ammunition, and that is basically it as far as this ship is concerned. This is the main magazine. It is above deck, but you know, it's made of wood. Putting the magazine lower down isn't really going to help all that much. And it, well, it does have a steel door, I suppose, but even this relatively small concentration of ammunition does actually mean that because this is a wooden ship, there actually had to be a special support pillar underneath to stop the deck collapsing, and we'll see that when we get further into the ship. And as you can see, just come outside, and here we are on the starboard side of the ship. And just before we keep heading inside, I just thought, well, we come to the stern here, and you can see we've got some traditional paravane floats. So we've got one there, and we've got one here. So because, of course, just because there are acoustic mines, magnetic mines, influence mines, etc., doesn't mean there aren't the old school traditional contact mines. So it would still do traditional mine sweeping. And then you have these two crane arms, one here and one here. And these two would not only be used to stream the cables for the paravanes, but they'd also be used to support a special anti-magnetic mine feature, which we'll see in a minute. So now coming in off of the quarter deck, as you can see, this has all been very lovingly restored. In here is the ship's galley, which is still in use. And then just coming a bit further forward, we've passed through the mess area where people are still eating. So this is part of the ship's accommodation. So you can see wooden sides looking very much like an old school ship of the line, and regular bunks. We're in the bow, so everything is narrowing. But as you can see from these pictures, this was not always like this. Lucid was decommissioned and sold off, but then not particularly taken care of. And then I've got some other pictures here, like this one. This is what the space we're in now looked like after it had been cleared out of all sorts of things, including various pests like raccoons and whatever other wildlife you happen to get in this area. And just here, yeah, this is a hot tub that the previous owners had built in, which, as you can imagine, had not done massive favors for the ship. This hatchway here is this hatchway here. And as you can see, the hot tub is now gone in favor of more accurate crew berthing. So if we continue to come forward, here's our capstan motor. So we're coming right up forward into the bow. And right up here is just general store. So we're right in the bow. There's a little hatch there. And various special supplies that you might need when running a ship. Now, we're still in forward berthing, but what we now need to pay attention to is this little thing. What's this little hatch? Well, back when the ship was first built, and bear in mind this ship has been around for a very, very long time, she was initially built with a fixed hull-mounted sonar to look for mines. However, later on, a more advanced sonar became available, and that was a dipping sonar. And so the old fixed sonar was taken off, and then if we look down through the gaps, yep, that is indeed water straight down. And that was where the old dipping sonar went. And of course, when the ship was underway, there would be a steel plate covering that, so you didn't get everything splashing back up. But for the minute, as the ship's undergoing restoration, the steel plate is off because we are stationary. Come back through the ship's heads. These are almost completely restored now. The little laundry room. Just a couple of laundromats there. Into the ship's mess, and we're basically looped around to where we were before. Literally the only other part of this superstructure at the fantail or quarterdeck level is this section, the officer's wardroom, and some parallel accommodation on the other side. So we have senior enlisted quarters. We have the medical section. I would not call it really a sick bay. I mean, it's labeled as a sick bay, but you're not going to be stretched out here, are you? This is where you come to get treatment, but you'd have to recover somewhere else on your own bat. And then we're back out again. So we can go up or down, but since down is the bit that's still under renovation, as you can probably see, we're instead going to go up again. So here we are overlooking the bow. We've come one deck up. You see there's the 40mm and that bronze capstan I was talking about earlier. And this is, of course, bridge level. So we're going to come around here. There's some searchlights. Come inside again. So this is the command and control center for the ship. And again, as you can see, everything here has to be made out of either non-magnetic steel or bronze or brass. So all the ship's instruments here and all of the controls are all made of these substances. And for people who may have served on one of these ships, some of this may look a little bit different because, again, over time, as these ships went through, things broke, things got replaced. So you might have had slightly different controls here. But as you can see, these are new ones, non-magnetic, that have been put in place. And to give you some idea of just how much work this has been, here's a picture, once they cleared out the raccoons and the trash, of what this area used to look like. And yeah, the table didn't come with the ship. The table was brought in by the first volunteers. So again, that's all they had to work with. And that is exactly the same shot nowadays. So not only have they had to find all of the controls from various other similar ships, but also even down to the portholes and all the paintwork, all of that has had to be sourced and everything's had to be rewired again. And the only thing that's different between this ship now and the way it was when she was in active service is these red lines, which are a full fire suppression and sprinkler system. And that's simply because, well, this ship's made of wood and Thanks to that, well, being non-magnetic, not many were lost to enemy action, but it did mean that they actually lost more of these ships to fire than to any kind of enemy action. And so obviously as a museum ship, having put a lot of work into it, they put a fire suppression system in just to make sure that it doesn't go up in flames at random again. Coming in immediately behind the bridge is the chart room. So you've got your dead reckoning system, which was an advance on what you get over most World War II era vessels. You've got the sonar and radar section, and this is where you would look to find your mines using the sonar systems here, as well as radar, just to look out for things more generally. And then this room didn't exist when the ship was originally built, but is an authentic change to how the ship was laid out. So I've actually here got some original builder's plans. You can see this is the AM421 class minesweeper. And the profile looks a little different to what Lucid looks like now, because during her career, additional equipment was brought in. So we've been down to the 40 mil. We've gone up to the bridge. We've come back along here. So that's where the chart room was. But now here, because originally this was all open, and then this has subsequently all been built and extended over. And so we are kind of here-ish somewhere. And this is the original ship's mast. And if we come round, well, there's the mast. As you can see, it's no longer outside. It's now inside. So this space, while it is authentic to the ship as in service, it's not authentic to the ship as it was very originally built. And since they're trying to take the ship back to the 1950s layout, they are going to use this as a general display space rather than anything else. Now, one thing you're going to notice is some floats here, what we saw there now on the stern, but this acoustic cable reel. So this whole area had a bunch of extra minesweeping equipment. And we can still see some of that if we just head outside over here. So here we are by the ship's funnel coming up from the engine room. And these things are specialist floats. Now, obviously, there's not a huge amount that's particularly unique about them, apart from the fact they're vaguely cone-shaped. But the idea of these is there's quite a lot of them carried, is that when a ship is out doing its minesweeping duties, unless you have some very specific points of reference, if you're very close inland, it can otherwise, in an era well before GPS, be very difficult to work out exactly where you are relative to where you were before. Now, yes, you have the inertial navigation system, but that's not precise enough to give you an exact set of coordinates. So the idea was if you were sweeping through a minefield where you did need very exact sets of coordinates, you would start off and go, right, we're going to chuck one of these into the sea and it would float there. And now you have a reference point and you would sail along the path of where you wanted to sweep. Obviously doing your first stretch of minesweeping, you put another buoy down. Okay, now you have two sets of references. And now you can do what some people call mowing the lawn. You go back and around and back and around and back around, a little bit like the aliens in Pac-Man. And you could drop off more of these buoys, and that would show you not only where you've been, but where you needed to go relative to those buoys. Which is, of course, very important, not just for your own safety, knowing which parts of the sea you'd swept already and which parts you hadn't, but also very important for the safety of the ships you were securing the sea for, because it meant you knew you had cleared your entire grid rather than overlapping an area that you perhaps already swept, and thus missing somewhere that perhaps you thought you had, but you hadn't, where there may well be a mine. Now, more minesweeping equipment just over here. Turning. Now you can see these are more of these buoys. They're relatively lightweight. I can use one as a parasol, although that's probably not the best of ideas. But this big reel that's next to me, as you might have seen from the plans, there are two of these reels. So there's this one and there's one that would be immediately below us. And these would have very long cables wound around them. And one of them would be a noisemaker reel. So for acoustic mines, obviously the ship's designed to run very, very quietly. You'd run a cable out, and at the end of the cable and along the cable, there'd be noise emitters. So you could sail through the minefield, set these off, and then the mines would explode safely behind you. The other one, a similar type of cable, but with a different purpose. Instead of acoustic emitters, it would have a series of magnetic induction coils, and you would feed it power, obviously from the ship's generators, hence why it had to be connected to the ship. And then once you fed it that electricity, you would be producing magnetic pulses which would then hopefully set off the magnetic mines, again, well away from the ship. And those pulses would vary in strength and intensity and duration, because of course, some magnetic mines would have anti-tamper features, which might be designed to go, oh, if you get a very, very quick pulse, that's obviously some kind of decoy, so don't detonate. So it wouldn't just be a case of pulse, pulse, pulse. It would be a case of, well, here's a weak, quick pulse. Now here's a strong, long pulse and a short, strong pulse and a long, low-level field, and so on and so forth. So it was all very, very sophisticated, far more sophisticated than the majority of World War II minesweeping, which, while incredibly dangerous, did largely still consist of the old paravanes trying to cut the mooring cables for mines. Right, and we're now one level up from the enclosed bridge. We're now on the navigation bridge, and this is an area which is still under a degree of conservation. So, spinning around, here we go. You can see we've got a chair, we've got a nice awning, got a compass binnacle in progress, but while this has all been carefully preserved and repainted, the other equipment that needs to come up here has not yet done so. A very bright searchlight up there as well. And so this is, as a work in progress, but you've seen from some of the photos of what they had to start with, this is hugely in advance of what was left to them. Go inside the navigation bridge, and just there, chart house again. These two mountings, one here on the port side, and one there on the starboard side. These were to take 50 caliber machine guns, Browning 50 cals. We saw one of those down in the armory. A flag locker, top of the funnel. And just down there, it's the reel and the buoys that we were looking at a little bit earlier. The base of the mast. Now the mast originally obviously goes very high up with a crow's nest, but now it just ends there because while the ship was not in the hands of the current team, woodpeckers got at the mast, so for safety purposes, the hollowed out section's been taken off, and again, that's another project to be redone at some point in the future. But if we head along here, there's another interesting feature of this shelter area. So not only have you got the shelter to help keep the maps dry, and a little bit of coffee, because of course you always need coffee, but there's two bunks. Now, why are there two bunks here? Well, it's very simple, because we're fairly high up. I mean, this ship is considerably short of about 200 feet. But as you can see, we are pretty high up off the waterline. Combine that with the fact that as a minesweeper, as we said, there are already contact mines out there that really... There are still contact mines out there that you really don't want to hit. You end up in a situation where the ship has a very, very shallow draft. Maximum draft, fully loaded, is about 10 feet. At the moment, she's drawing about 5. And with a height above waterline like this, you can imagine these things get very lively in a seaway. Not really much you can do about that. But if the weather's really bad, not only is this ship going to be pitching and rolling like a little cork, it's going to be incredibly unsafe to go down any of the ladders and so forth on the exterior, like the one that we just came up, in order to take shelter. So if you were up here and you were commanding the ship or helping to command the ship, and it suddenly became very apparent that, well, the weather's gotten very bad, you may well need to take shelter in this signal shack for an extended period of time. So extended, in fact, that, as I said, there are some bunks here for you to take a few sleeps in. Of course, I'm not here alone. There's the ship's crew. There's also a certain battleship curator doing his own videos. We are spying on him. Now, I haven't shown you much of the quarterdeck dash fantail, and that's purely because it's a bit of an open-air workshop at the moment, because, of course, work is still ongoing to restore the ship from its previously gutted state. But while people are working up there, I can show you what it's like down here. So again, you'd be forgiven for mistaking this area for a ship of the line. You've got wooden knees and so forth. So all of this is under considerable restoration. There are still some hatches and so forth that are made of metal, but the vast majority, again, of the ship is made of wood. You can see in here, for example, down here where it has not yet been fully painted. So this is all original ship structure. We're right under the fantail at the moment. So if we look up, you can see that's a ventilator fan in the fantail to try and keep us cool. Although it is appreciably cooler down here anyway, partly because of the insulative qualities of wood and partly because, of course, we are getting closer to the waterline. So as we head over in this direction, we're heading aft. And into the rudder area. So this is one of the original rudder posts. As you can see, this is made of this nickel bronze alloy coming down into the area where the rudder would have gone. And there would be various hydraulics to help run the rudders. And another one here, which was taken away when the ship was being stripped, but they've got another one coming in. And where this frame is, this is where there would be the final steering control. So this would be a geared manual box, which would allow you to approximately every 20 turns turn the rudders by 1 degree through mechanical reduction. But as you can see, that is where the vessel ends completely. So this is the ship's engine room. Again, as you can see, still very much a work in progress, some wooden ballast tanks and so forth. And here you would have some big Packard diesel engines. You might have noticed some other features on here look a bit like their submarine features, and that's because a lot of submarine technology was reused on the ship. And these engines were, of course, taken out again while it was being stripped, but everything is being built to go back into place. Again, the Lucid crew actually have some of the engines from one of her sister ships, and they're going to be brought in at a later stage during the restoration work. And if you're wondering how they're going to get them in, well, just to the right of these beams, you can see there's an area of what looks like very new wood. That's what's called a soft patch, and these were very often built into Navy vessels specifically to be either unbolted or, in this case, unbolted and potentially even cut out as areas through which you could raise and lower very large machinery that otherwise would be fully enclosed. So at some point, that area will be removed, the engines will be put in, everything will be redone, and then it'll be all closed up again. And if you're wondering why this area looks like it's been on fire, yeah, the previous owners did manage to set fire to the ship at one point. However, as you can see, fortunately, it only charred the outer layers of this bit of wood, so it's not too bad. So we now go through again. And this is technically forward engine room, but I come around here and drop the camera down a bit. You can see these various platforms, and this is where various generators were for providing power to the ship generally, for providing power to that anti-magnetic mine cable we talked about, and various other bits and pieces. So again, all of this currently under restoration. The plan is to have a generator in here because then that'll give the ship some independence from shore power as and when she needs to be moved. But this is going to mostly become a classroom and learning space, which will be quite nice because this is actually, I think, probably one of the largest compartments on the ship. And as a bit of a highlight, you can see here, these are the knees. We saw they've been painted everywhere else on the ship, but in this location, they've decided they're going to strip all the paintwork off. And that gives you a chance to see exactly what they are like. So you can see you've got all the bronze bolts holding it all together, non-magnetic. And instead of going out Age of Sail style and looking for bits of timber that grow in very specific shapes, because they don't have to support 32-pounder cannon right above, these are laminated strips of oak. And that pretty much wraps up our look at Lucid with just a couple of important points to note. Firstly, you might have seen, you know, we went pretty much everywhere there is to go on the ship. There's one or two compartments we left alone, but other than that, you've seen pretty much everything there is on the ship. And that's not normally what the channel does. Normally we say, you know, come and have a look at the ship. We're going to show you the upper decks and then come and have a look at the rest of it. Well, at the moment, Lucid isn't open to the public. So that kind of encouragement usually isn't going to be very useful. Hence why we're showing you considerably more of the vessel. But the other thing to bear in mind is that while she's not generally open to the public, Lucid is open at the moment 2 days a year, one in the spring, one in the autumn or fall, as the Americans would have it. So if this video is going out on time, there will be an open day on Lucid on April the 11th, 2026. And if for whatever reason it's been delayed and that date's already been missed, then there will be another open day on Lucid in the fall. Again, you can go and check their website for details of that. And then you can come and look at the ship yourself over here in Stockton in California. So many thanks to obviously Lucid's crew for letting me look around and do all this filming. And of course, you know, follow them on social media, you know, send them feedback, etc., and congratulate them for the wonderful job they've done in taking what was essentially a slightly dodgy smelling raccoon infested wooden shack that was partly on fire and turning it into one of the best preserved museum ships of the entire US museum ship fleet. So with that, see you again in another video.
That's it for this video. Thanks for watching. If you have a comment or suggestion for a ship to review, let us know in the comments below. Don't forget to comment on the pinned post for dry dock questions.